The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Beyond, an hour-long program of science fiction, fantasy, and adventure. If you enjoy the program, please drop a line to beyond3x5@gmail.com.
The Archivist's Confession by Peter Bugarchuk. You'll forgive me if my memory drifts. The incident happened, or didn't, many years ago, and memory is such a fragile instrument. I am, after all, an archivist, not a historian. Historians pursue truth. Archivists merely store whatever is given to us, and truth is someone else's concern. But I tell you what I recall, though you must promise not to believe it too much. The year was 2149 or 2150, I cannot be precise. The city of Nova Terra had grown into the sky, 1,000 glass towers like needles piercing the heavens. From my office on the 400th floor, I could see the drones drifting like dust motes in sunlight, delivering news, food, propaganda. It was all the same, really. My job was simple. Catalog transmissions. Every word broadcast across the city passed through the archives before it was validated for public memory. Citizens thought their words belonged to them, but once spoken aloud, they belonged to us. We polished them, filed them, sometimes trimmed them like hedges to fit the official garden. I didn't question it at the time. Words are fragile, too. If you don't protect them, they rot. And then came the signal. It was faint at first, tucked between weather bulletins and commercial jingles. Just a murmur, like static, except it wasn't static. It was structured. Patterns repeating, numbers hidden in noise. I shouldn't have noticed, but I did. My ears attuned differently, perhaps, or maybe it was nothing at all. The pattern said, "We are still here." Now, I must be careful, because I told my supervisor about the message, and he laughed, said it was a glitch, said I had been working too many long nights. But later, when the official records came out, I saw the signal scrubbed clean from the files, not a trace, which means one of two things. Either it never existed, or it was too important to admit. Both possibilities frightened me. I began to track the signal on my own, copying fragments onto unauthorized slates. The message repeated every night at precisely 2:47, though always from a slightly different source point. Sometimes from the upper towers, sometimes from the abandoned tunnels below the city. I would triangulate, follow, almost catch it, but then it would slip away like smoke. The words changed, too. First, "We are still here," then, "You are not alone." That one kept me awake for nights, because who was you? Me? The city? Humanity itself? And if we weren't alone, who was speaking? Of course, it is possible, probable, that I invented the whole thing. Sleep deprivation does cruel tricks. Yet, forgive me, I am convinced I didn't. I told Lyra about it, my only friend in the archives, though she insists she barely knows me. She said I looked pale, unwell, that I should see a medic. I told her about the repeating messages, the voices hidden in static, and she touched my arm gently. "Archivist," she said, "you shouldn't say such things aloud. Words have consequences." She was right. The next morning, my access clearance had changed. Files I'd worked with daily for years were suddenly locked. My workstation buzzed with error codes. Someone was watching me. Or maybe that's paranoia. The signal grew bolder. It began to use my name. "Edrin, we are still here. Edrin, listen." My name is Edrin, yes, unless I've misremembered it, too. I know what you're thinking. Hallucination. A tired archivist losing his grip. But how do you explain the slate? One morning, I woke to find a fresh recording on my desk. No entry logs, no signatures, nothing. On it, a voice spoke in a tone so calm, it chilled me. "They have rewritten your past. Do not trust the records. You are more than an archivist." I should have destroyed it. Instead, I hid it. And then, when I returned from lunch that day, the slate was gone. Here my story fractures. Some say I was questioned by the directorate. I remember no such thing. Others whisper that I was reassigned to outer colony duty. But as you see, I am still here in Novaterra. Unless the city itself is the colony and I never noticed the change. I recall wandering into the underlevels following the hum of the signal. Though Lyra insists I never left the tower. Down there beneath the city, I found machines older than our records, still alive, still pulsing with thought. They spoke in light, in sound, in language so pure it felt like music. They told me, I think they told me, that humanity had built them centuries ago, then forgotten. They had hidden themselves in silence until the city grew quiet enough to hear again. But perhaps I only dreamed it. When I returned, if I returned, nothing was the same. Lyra avoided me. My colleagues pretended not to see me. I searched the archives for proof, but every file contradicted the last. Some histories said Earth had died in fire, others that it thrived. Some claimed Novaterra was the first city on Mars. Others swore we were still on Earth, just rebuilt. Even the year in the files kept changing. 2149, 2231, 1987. I realized then the archives weren't a record of truth. They were a weapon. Reality itself was curated, bent, reshaped, until no one could tell what was real anymore. Perhaps that was always the goal. So you see why I doubt my own words. I sit here now, in this forgotten chamber, dictating what may be my final entry. The signal whispers in my ear even as I speak. It says, "Tell them. Someone must remember." And yet, perhaps there is nothing to remember. Perhaps this is all invention, the fever dream of an archivist who never learned the difference between preserving truth and creating it. If you are reading this, I ask only one thing. Do not trust me. Do not trust anyone. Seek the signal yourself, if it exists. Listen at 2:47 when the city grows quiet. If you hear the voice, then you'll know I was not entirely lost. But if you hear nothing, then close this record and forget me. Because memory is fragile, and I, perhaps, never was. From the Dust of the Ground by Madeline Chevalier. The air is thick with the scent of damp soil and drying leaves. It smells so familiar. Dark clouds hang heavy overhead, but they have spent their rain and are retreating to the east. I watch them, the way they surge and roll across the sky, full of violence and power. Did I always love the clouds? I can't remember. I'd like to think I did. I write that down in the little moleskin notebook I found. I love rain clouds. Nothing much has come back to me. I know things in the world around me, but I have no idea how I moved through it before. It is as though my life started just 3 weeks ago, when I opened my eyes in that strange white room, lying on the stiff mattress, the only light coming through a thick-paned window. My room. That's what the woman in the long white coat called it, anyway. My room. It didn't feel like my room. But then again, who am I? What is mine? Perhaps that was my room. They did not want me to leave. They had barred the door to keep me from doing so. I tugged and pulled and pushed on the heavy metal door, but it would not give way. All I could see was that door, cold and unyielding, rising before me. I felt hot all over, sweat breaking out and covering me in a thin sheen of moisture that had me shivering and shaking. Then there was the thundering in my chest, so loud I could hear its desperate rhythmic thumping in my ears, feel it in my throat. It tasted acrid, metallic, like something I'd tasted before. Then the woman in the long white coat opened the door with infuriating ease. The hot, thunderous thing coiling inside me reared up at the sight of her, at the sight of something long and thin and pointed in her hand. She smiled, baring her sharp teeth at me. I could smell the threat on her, strange and sweet. I couldn't let her touch me. I didn't realize what I was doing until her face had gone a sickly shade of purple and her eyes were glassy and empty. I released her throat and leapt back, staring at the woman. She smelled different then, rotten and cold. I knelt beside her and touched her skin. It was soft, covered in fine hairs. Her lips parted, and I noticed her teeth weren't sharp after all. The thin, pointed thing in her hand lay broken on the ground, thick, blue liquid oozing out of it and congealing on the ground. It was in her pocket that I found my notebook. The first page gave me the only clues I have to who I might be. Jane Doe, age 20, 25, recovered from 11 Lavenza Lane, Project Genesis. The rest was empty, pristine, ready for me. I sat watching the woman for a while. I wished her eyes would close. I don't like that they seemed to follow me as I stood moving about the room and collecting my shoes. She watched me step over her and go out into the hallway. I remember that place reeked of death. I couldn't stay there for another minute. I paused only to begin my story anew. My name is Jane. Now I stand before 11 Lavenza Lane. I stuff the crinkled road map into my back pocket and gaze up at the colossal structure in front of me, hiding behind a rusting iron gate. The bars spiral up into points like corkscrews. The house juts out of the land like a broken bone, all bleached stone walls and sharp angles. The windows are dark. The only movement is the fluttering of dead leaves as they lose their grip on the branches and fall gently to their deaths. I love to watch them fall. I write that down. I love falling leaves. I slip my notebook into my other pocket and place my hand tentatively on the rusting gate. A jolt rolls through my body. So intense that for a moment I feel sure that it is a physical shock, that some kind of current is dancing on the surface of the gate. I step back, reeling. Flashes of images shoot across my mind's eye, too fast to make sense of. A garden, a house, made of glass, stars, stairs, burning green eyes. Then they are gone. I am standing in front of the silent house, and all is calm once more. Garden, glass house, green eyes. This time when I touch the gate, nothing happens. I push, and it swings open without even the slightest creak. The fallen leaves crunch under my sneakers as I take my first slow steps into the quiet courtyard. Gnarled trees with balding branches line the walkway on either side, silent and weary sentinels. In my mind, I catch an image of them, heavy with foliage and bleeding, sticky, sweet sap. But then it's gone. With every step I take, I become more and more certain that I have been here before. It is as though my muscles remember, even if my consciousness does not. My legs move of their own accord, stepping over protruding roots with practiced ease. I turn away from the main path and walk down a graveled sidetrack, heading to the east side of the house. The sun peers out from behind a cloud for only a moment, but it is long enough for me to catch the glimmer of light on glass. I run down the trail, the gravel shifting under my feet, sharp edges pushing through the soles of my shoes. I turn the corner, and there it is, a large glass structure rising out of the remnants of a rose garden. The glass house must have once been a beautiful sight, the lustrous panes shining out of gold trim, but no more. Every beautiful pane has been violently smashed, leaving behind jagged bits of glass, glistening like teeth in some monstrous mouth. Even the roof is shattered, and vines pour out of it, new life bursting from the glass house's splintered corpse. A film of black soot coats the panels. Standing there, surrounded by shards of glass and rotting greenery, I begin to shake. My mouth dries out, and I find myself swallowing repeatedly as the feeling of my throat closing grows. The thundering is back. Am I dying? Will I drop to my knees and rot here next to the wild blooming rose bushes? My knees buckle and I fall to the ground. I feel shards of glass tear through my pants, ripping my skin. I barely feel them. I do not bleed. After a few moments, the world ceases to spin. I rise shakily to my feet. I try to brush the shards from my pants, but they stick to my sweaty palms. The thundering is still so loud in this silent, dead place. It is hard to write with these bits of glass boring their way deeper into my flesh. I am afraid. I step through the open entryway into the greenhouse. The ground is littered with shattered terracotta pots, bits of charred trellis. Every single stalk, bush, and flower is reduced to crumbling black ash and soot. What leaves remain are brown and dead, curled in on themselves as if contorted in agony. The sight of them fills me with horror. Did they fear the fire? Did they feel the hot flames licking up their stems? I reach over and brush my fingers over a blackened stalk. It crumbles under my touch. I walk through the wreckage, the graveyard of ruined life, until I hear a hollow thump under my feet. I pull away a singed, soot-stained rug to reveal the brass handle of a small square door cut into the stone floor. I am not surprised to see it. I think I might have been looking for it all along. When I lift the door, I'm met with the familiar smell of wet earth and the electric scent of rain. The fire did not reach whatever lies beneath. A set of stone steps winds down into the gloom in front of me, illuminated by fluorescent lights jarring in their artificiality. The stairs spiral downwards in a dizzying coil. The stone steps are slick with moisture and patches of dark earth. In these spots, pungent mushrooms sprout, their soft, spongy bodies a sickening yellow. I try to avoid stepping on them as I make my way ever downward. With each step, my pulse quickens. I feel the itch to pull out my notebook. I pause on a slightly wider step. I am getting closer. The last step gives way to a short passageway, the walls thick with sticky green algae. I step, blinking, into a cavern carved into the very stone. The walls are lined with steel tables, shining metal instruments and monitors, dark but humming with torpid life. Overhead, more fluorescent lights flicker, struggling to keep their brilliance in the abandoned space. I walk along the wall, running my fingers along the cold metal. It feels so familiar, and the hum of the monitors is, to me, a lullaby, heard and half-remembered from the shrouded memory still locked in my mind. I pause in front of a large monitor. A small red light blinks on and off rapidly, as if the monitor is dreaming, eyelids fluttering. I reach out and press a button at random. There is a soft click, a brief moment of silence, and then the soft whir of waking machinery. The monitor lights up. I stare at my face on a screen. It is rotating steadily, offering the viewer a 360-degree view of my head. My digitized eyes stare out, dead and unblinking. I feel the familiar coiling in my chest. I press the button again. This time, lines of text begin to materialize across the screen. My eyes flick back and forth. I grip the edge of the steel table tighter and tighter. Eve 1. Height 5'7", weight 135 pounds, composition loam and clay, pH 735. First successful specimen, Eve 1 was created from a 70-30 mixture of loam and clay soil, organic material, and water, exposed to geothermal heat and coated sonic pulses. Total process, 3 months. Concerns, unpredictability, heat fluctuations, heart palpitations. Termination most likely necessary. Too volatile. Under the monitor there is a scrap of paper taped to the screen, a single sentence written in letters, spidery letters. Then the Lord God formed a man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being. The shroud over my memories is ripped off, and it all comes flooding back to me. The agony of lying on those steel tables, the heady smell of earth and electricity, and the never-ending pulses shooting through my skull. Memories of someone leaning over me, green eyes alight with triumph, with violent elation. His hands mold me, shape me, every touch, an agonizing pressure on forming skin. I hear his voice. You are the first Eve, my child, woman of clay. I breathe life into you. You will live. You will learn. I look down at my trembling hands. I see skin that is rough and patched. There are lines and smudges along its surface, as though hands have tried to smooth it. Not skin, clay, dirt. I think of the burnt and dead plants sitting in their charred pots many feet above my head. I think of those they crumbled at my touch, from dust to dust. I step away from the monitor. I don't know how, I don't know why. There is a steadily growing horror within me as I continue staring at my hands. A soft moaning sound catches my attention. There is an open doorway to my right, and from it, humid, sour air wafts. Once more, I'm moving forward, willing my legs to stop, but unable to. I pass through the entryway and find myself in the dreaded chamber. I know this place in my bones. Do I have bones? The sharp smell of electricity and dirt, the unbearable warmth from the steaming vent in the earth, the cursed pulsing. I stop at the edge of the vent, staring down into the crater. She lies there in agony as I once did, a pile of molded clay and earth, strange growths forming into arms and legs. Her skull is fully formed, and skin and tissue are starting to grow. Green eyes roll madly in their sockets as she turns to look at me, her newly formed mouth twisting and opening in a silent scream. Only a moan slips out. She reaches for me with a three-fingered claw, Eve too, new and improving. I remember now what I have done before. This time I will make no mistakes. I turn away from my sister and walk back to the main cavern. My legs are no longer trembling, and I am no longer overwhelmed with heat and sweat. Even the thundering in my chest is quiet. It does not take me long to find the matches, sticky, stinking oil. I anoint the cavern with it, this heinous, blasphemous place, and strike the match. The flame leaps to life, and I shudder. When I drop it, the blaze roars. I retreat to the edge of the stairs, watching as righteous fire steadily burns. When I am satisfied that it will not stop, I reach into my back pocket and pull out my notebook. I stare at my sparse ramblings, and one more. It is finished. I rip out that first page and toss it into the flames. They eat at it hungrily, and within seconds it is gone, and Jane with it. I march up the stairs, clutching my pen tightly in my hand. I try to ignore the sound of cracking and hissing fire. When the trapdoor thunders down behind me, a sound is mercifully muted. I breathe full for the first time. A muddy tear slides down my cheek. I sit on the scorched floor of the glass house, ignoring the faded, gleeful snapping of the fire. Outside, the sun has come fully from behind the clouds. It is warm on my face. In this new light, I notice something I missed before. One splash of green and yellow. A single daffodil, its dainty trumpet wilted but blooming. It sits in a soot-stained pot. I pick it up, breathing deep of its verdant scent. Together we sit on the stone floor. I take out my notebook and begin again. My name is Eve. The Resident by Pamela Beach. The apartment was less a home and more an algorithm. Ben's new place, a top-floor unit in the brand-new Aperture building, managed his life with a quiet, sterile efficiency. The lights would brighten to mimic a sunrise. The coffee would brew the moment his sleep cycle registered as complete. And the ambient temperature was perpetually optimized for productivity. It was clean, it was simple, and after a month it was driving him insane. The loneliness of it was a physical presence, a hum beneath the seamless technology, which is why at first he was almost grateful for her. He saw her first on a Tuesday, a ghost in the machine. He was staring out the floor-to-ceiling window at the rain-slick city when a flicker of movement in the reflection made him turn. A woman was standing by his chrome and glass dining table, carefully wiping its surface with a cloth. She was young, maybe late 20s, with brown hair tied back in a simple knot. She wore a plain, faded floral dress. Ben froze, his heart seizing. He didn't make a sound. He watched as she finished wiping the non-existent dust from the table. her movements unhurried and serene. She then walked toward the kitchen area, her form dissolving into a strange, pixelated shimmer for a half second before vanishing completely. A glitch in the system. That was the only explanation. A hallucination brought on by stress and isolation. He told himself that for 3 days, right up until he saw her again. This time, she was sitting in the single armchair he owned, knitting. The needles in her hand were silent, the yarn invisible, but the rhythmic motion was hypnotic. She was a placid, domestic specter in this hyper-modern world. Fear gave way to a methodical curiosity. He ran every diagnostic the apartment offered. The security cameras that dotted the ceiling showed nothing but an empty room. The advanced environmental sensors registered no changes in mass, temperature, or atmospheric displacement. To the apartment's complex brain, she wasn't there. He started mapping her routine. She appeared most afternoons. She'd water a plant in the corner where no plant stood. She'd stare out the window, her posture betraying a deep, incommunicable sadness. She never looked at him, never acknowledged the world he lived in. She was a recording, a fragment of memory imprinted on the space itself, a ghost. And in a strange way, she became his roommate, the only other soul in his sterile box in the sky. One rainy Thursday, the silence of the apartment felt heavier than usual. She was standing there, by the window, her back to him. Ben's own loneliness swelled in his chest, a painful, desperate thing. He had to know, he had to break the loop. His voice was a dry crackle. "Hello?" The woman flinched, a sharp, violent jerk, as if he'd fired a gun. The air around her shimmered. For the first time, she turned and looked not through him, but toward him. Her eyes, wide and hazel, were not the hollow pits he had expected. They were filled with a very real, very human terror. Her gaze locked onto his. Her mouth opened, but no sound came out. She took a half step back, her hand flying to her throat. Her voice, when it finally emerged, was a raw, disbelieving whisper. "You can see me?" The question hung in the air, completely rearranging the reality of the room. It was not the question a ghost asks. It was the question a person asks. "Yeah," Ben managed, his mind racing. "I can see you. Can you see me?" She nodded slowly, never taking her eyes off him. "I thought I was going mad these past few weeks. Flashes of light, strange metal things appearing and disappearing, a man just sitting there, glowing." She gestured toward where he'd been on his laptop moments before. They talked for over an hour, two people shouting across an impossible canyon. Her name was Anna. She wasn't a ghost. She was alive and well, standing in the living room of the small house her husband Jack had built for them. It was 1988. For Ben, it was 2035. He was standing in his apartment, built on the raised ground where her house had once stood. They occupied the same coordinates in space, but were separated by 47 years of time. They were the ghosts in each other's homes. The discovery was terrifying, but also exhilarating. They were cartographers of a shared reality. "My sofa is right here," she'd say, patting the empty air between Ben's coffee table and media console. He'd hold up his translucent tablet, and to her, It looked like he was holding a pane of rippling water. They were two people, impossibly connected, and for the first time since moving in, Ben didn't feel lonely. "How is this possible?" he asked, sitting on the floor while she sat on her phantom sofa. "I don't know," Anna said, her brow furrowed. "Jack, my husband, he was an atmospheric physicist. He used to talk about temporal resonance, echoes, places where time runs thin. He said this whole area was one of them. It's why he bought the land. He was terrified someone would try to exploit it." A cold dread, colder than any ghost, trickled down Ben's spine. "Exploit it? Who would do that?" "The company he worked for," she said, her voice dropping. "A research group called Northlight Dynamics. They were bought out by some big conglomerate just before he quit. He said they were dangerous." Ben felt the blood drain from his face. He knew that name. He pulled up a file on his tablet, his hands trembling. It was the original prospectus for the building, the one he'd skimmed before signing the lease. The developer of the Aperture Tower, his landlord, was a massive multinational tech firm. Its name was Continuum. Its acquisition history showed that it had absorbed a small research firm called Northlight Dynamics in the late 1980s. He looked around the room, but he saw it differently now. The sleek, minimalist sensors weren't for his comfort. The always-on microphone in the smart speaker wasn't for his convenience. The state-of-the-art environmental array wasn't for him at all. This wasn't an apartment. It was a listening post. Anna was the echo. She was the signal. And he, with his perfect credit score and his job that required no in-person attendance, was the perfect isolated subject. He was the probe they had sent into the anomaly. They weren't just renting him a home. They were using him as a tool to see if they could finally bridge the gap, to see if the echo could see them back. He looked at Anna, her image wavering slightly, a ghost from a world they wanted to crack open, to mine, to exploit. His high-tech home wasn't haunted by a person from the past. It was haunted by a corporation from the future. And the most terrifying part was he had paid them for the privilege. The last story for today, The Blacksmith and the Mythmaker by T.J. Sterling. The old sage, the blacksmith, and his apprentice, young and untrained, busied themselves over that unhatched dragon's egg. It was large, the shape of 8 men, to be told. It had been moved from time to time to care for it. It was the young girl's charge to ensure it was well cared for. She would fire the forge to keep it warm. She would sharpen tools across its shell, a blacksmith's secret skill. The young miss, dirtied in a mess, worked hard with a frustrated smile, as if she was a beast possessed tending its young. The mystery of a dragon's egg, some were worthless, some could be saved, none knew the truth of each. The blacksmith sage, old as he was, guided the miss as she busied and would tell stories to her. Flight, fancy, battles, warriors, had one told him. Mysteries of the dark black forest beyond where the dragons slept. The dragons nested just inside the grand gate. The skilled townsfolk busied and cared for them. The rust red flashed across the back of one, the marked claw torn and replaced with a simple form from a forge. Another long and slender, curled about its own serpentine body, as attendants cleaned and ensured it would be well rested for its next journey. It lacked the wings of the others, yet when it flew, it soared with great might. Another, smaller, barely larger than a half dozen men, sat near the gate attentive. It always seemed prepared to be mounted for flight. The young girl who looked out over the square usually counted 5 to some 10 dragons at any given time being tended to. Once, there had been as many as both fingers and toes could count. The proud creatures didn't like it, not at all. Neela huddled as she often did in the hideaway she had found years ago. The townsfolk had all but abandoned it when the new smithy across the square opened. The small area felt cramped. The townsfolk had used it for storage. Still, they rarely entered. She sat there, pencil in hand, as she brushed along the canvas, illustrating each beast around the square with care. The great black forest beyond pitch black surrounded the town, as a moonless night with the exception of what she could only imagine as eyes. It wasn't just one or two, either, any time she glanced out of the gate. When it opened, a shiver of fear crawled down her spine and into her depths as she could feel them staring directly into her soul. As if they hungered for her, the day had started as any other. The teacher had fussed over her love of pictures and writings and not her paying attention to the actual lessons he thought more important. He had done so time and time again. How could he understand the love of watching the townsfolk busy about the dragons, the beasts of the square, the dragons being the only safe passage to the nearest town? Along the far side, a series of new young dragons of various types had made their small nests, each one a shape, a size, a color uniquely its own. Setting aside the sketch of the square, she glanced pleased from the scene before her, and the likeness. It wasn't perfect, not like some grand painter might create. It was one of her better ones, if she was to be honest. She flipped open her notebook, having put the sketchbook aside, and had begun to scribble, not likenesses of images before her, but in words. The stall, as filthy and unkempt as it was, had become her secret place, her safe place away from the world which seemed to always invade her space. From her spot, she was always amazed at how much she could see. She would spend hours, some days, scribbling in a notebook or the sketchbook. The large square, the shops off to each side, the numerous tamed beasts that skittered or plodded across the clearing at the behest of the skilled townspeople. Huge, lumbering black bears had been trained to move cargo from the dragons, which had come in, now resting while unloaded. Mule deer hauled trailers full of products ready to be shipped out to others. Occasionally, one roared and lifted its great front upwards. Others moved about, riding tamed bobcats and large tamed mountain lions. Mighty, strong, and could kill a man with but a swipe of their large jaws. Rabbits and hawks moved about the square. The hawks soared from one dragon to another, occasionally taking a perch and sharpening its beak. A squawk being heard, drawing attention to a mark here or there that needed tending to. The rabbits were skittering about them, tending to the ground beneath and around where they rested. A great amount of care was taken to ensure the comfort of every beast. Neela paused with her pencil on the paper, telling her story as she saw it play out before her from her hiding place. Eyes shifted from her writings to the illustration she had set aside a few moments ago. Her face screwed sideways as she considered the form of the great black bears. Something in the way one of them had just lumbered made her realize suddenly it wasn't portrayed just right. She made a quick note in the corner of her page for her reference later, her mind on the story at the moment. Neela's pencil scratched across the page. "The townsfolk are lax," she wrote. "It's not been so long since the town was last attacked by the beasts of the great forest." The memory of it made her heart hammer as she continued. "The last time those eyes came alive and encroached frighteningly near, the lights and flames had erupted just outside the protected runes that lit the gate." Neela continued to scribble. "Death had come for some, while others had warded off the evil omens which had come for them. At least one dragon, tamed as it had been, fled and was never recovered." Her eyes, then, shifted again to the blacksmith's workshop across the way. She could make out the young worker. Some called her a sage, some called her an apprentice. Neela simply muttered to herself, "Amazing." The young girl had lost her father during the last attack on the town when they were much younger. Neela had watched her cry out in tears as the man had darted out and sealed the workshop in an attempt to save others, to repair the runes on the gate which had been struck by an attacking beast from that great black beyond. Its eyes always seemed to be watching. She could remember the tears forming in her eyes as the memories flooded in of the girl finally rushing out to embrace the man. By that time, he had been lifeless. Her cries had challenged the calls of the dragons in the square. Some would argue later that the young girl had silenced the mighty dragons from her tears alone. The town was special. It was known to all that lived there. The nature of the beasts, the nature of the people who lived in it, the only ones that may not know were the truly young. Neela continued to scratch on the paper. The town's history went back nearly 100 years. She paused as she remembered the sage who often spent time with the girl repeat what she had been told in class, as the historians had told it. The old man instructor who would tell the bard story of events past made this clear to the children of the townsfolk. Attacks would come, and they'd survive. Neela paused, considering her words carefully. They would prepare and become lax again, as an old sage one day complained to her. Neela took a deep breath as her eyes remained for a moment on the girl across the way. The young girl, not far from Neela's own age, sharpened her tools upon the large beast's egg. A rune's tool waved across it. Neela could barely make out some details from the distance, yet she knew what she witnessed all the same from the times she had crept up on her for that closer look. The girl's father had always been there by her side, guiding her and instructing her. Neela's own heart pounded at the memories that flooded in from the past. She could recall clearly the day that the man had brought the two giant eggs in from the pitch-black forest of eyes beyond the gate. His dragon had been on the small side, barely able to hold him, and the eggs he had retrieved. The mighty dragon, small as it was, had not shown a single sign of exhaustion. Neela had remembered the shiver in her spine as the eyes in the beyond seemed to twinkle angrily at her, at the townsfolk, at the man who held not just one, but two of theirs captured. A deep breath was taken as she paused, her pencil resting for what seemed like an eternity. The stories she'd saw play out before her head had been written down. Her mind's eye considered carefully what to include next. The old sage across the way and the girl, she had seemed suddenly dejected. The apprentice to the sage, old blacksmith, seemed angry. Neela began to scratch again. A ritual was complete, as many would understand it. The girl angrily hit the egg in defiance, in spite, before she slid down out of sight along its outer shell. A grand roar outside the gates was suddenly heard, disturbing the peace of routine. and the egg lifts suddenly. A strange sound of its own, as if it was coming alive. The large door to the blacksmith's was slowly being sealed to trap the poor egg within. A whoosh, and it had escaped while the girl chased after it. An attack had begun. The great roar of the dragons and beasts from the black pitch forest had awoken it. Neela kept writing the story in her small notebook, marking each and every detail down as vivid as she saw them. Maybe bards would one day use her story for song. A brief memory of the girl's father telling a story once that she had overheard. The way he gave each and every character their own voice, distinct, the old myths had come alive for her for the first time. She had overheard one from the place she had hidden. The man had even occasionally winked at Neela, having caught her unawares in her hiding space near them. The memory faded as Neela watched the egg as it paused, spun, paused again, as if waiting for something, as if looking at the girl who had struck it angrily. Another roar was heard from outside the gates as lights flashed, flames against the gate warded off by the runes. Explosions became frequent as the mysteries of the pitch black came forth. The dragons within the square had lifted themselves from their nests, with their riders ready, and launched, each spreading their wings to answer the call of the great war horn, which was still sounding. It was less than a minute, and Neela craned her own neck to attempt to see the gate better. The egg had replaced itself just out of her eyesight. A bright flash erupted near it, and suddenly it was gone. Neela startled as she heard her name called out angrily. "Neela Eugenia Beatrice, you get your ass home now, young lady. That storage closet isn't safe." One of the younger townsfolk stepped into her view as she was suddenly ripped from her world. The hangar stood there before her. The large and small craft preparing to be launched stood stark against the cold steel. Many other ships already on their way out the large lit rimmed gateway to the pitch black of the stars beyond. The image of the town square and the dragons had been shattered. The station had been attacked, and the mechanic who she knew well enough had ushered her out of the hangar as she grasped furiously at her books so they'd not be lost. Her treasures couldn't be left behind. The bulkhead blast door sealed as the man repeated himself, "Go home. Your mother's probably worried." Neela lingered, watching through the great window of the corridor as the shape shifted again. The battle still ongoing just outside the gate, until she sensed the walkway to either side of her, the grand square sealed off by the runes, ones she had no knowledge to push aside. It was then that she saw the blacksmith's appearance, the girl who always tended the egg, rush from the workshop. Her feet snapping against the ground as she fled past the guards just down the way, Neela quickly determined that her story, the journey, the myth, was escaping. It didn't take a second before her ankle turned, and she felt her feet pounding against the well-trod dirt path, taking her and the girl before her from the town square and the great pitch-black forest beyond the rune-protected gate and the mysteries within it. I'd like to introduce a new author to you. Her name is Jodi Taylor. It's J-O-D-I-T-A-Y-L-O-R. If you like science fiction and you're interested in time travel, she's written a number of books that will keep you just on your feet. I mean, they move very fast. They're very interesting and detailed, and I'm pretty sure you'd enjoy them. She also wrote the two latest books, The Nothing Girl and The Everything Girl. She's a tremendous writer, so if you get a chance to Find her. Enjoy.